This is Dr. Patty Shelton, and you are listening to the LongevIQ podcast. We discuss anti-aging and longevity science and how to benefit from it so we can all live long, healthy, happy lives. Just before we get started, quick medical disclaimer, this podcast is for informational purposes only. It is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or to provide or replace medical advice. Please use this information to educate yourself as much as possible and share this information with a qualified health practitioner that you trust. In this episode, we're going to talk about hormones, how they affect our aging process, and how we could balance them naturally. Our guest in this episode is Dr. Lorraine Maita, MD, a functional medicine doctor, expert in anti-aging medicine and hormonal health in men and women. And joining us, as always, is Amir Ginsberg, the founder of LongevIQ. Dr. Maita, such a pleasure having you here. Thanks for joining us.
It's such a pleasure to be here. I think we really need to get the word out. Hormones seem to be scary to some people, but it's part of our normal process and you can't live without them.
Yeah, that's a perfect place to start. Let's talk in general about the role that hormones play in the aging process. Why are hormones so significant for anti-aging?
Well, hormones build, some hormones build you up, other hormones break you down. And what happens as we age, the ones that build you up go down, the ones that break you down go up. So trying to restore balance is really important to slow the aging process because we are going to age, but it doesn't have to be fast or process of suffering.
Beautiful message. Yeah. Let's just touch on maybe some of the specific hormones that are important for aging. And I know that there are too many to fully cover everything in one podcast episode, but kind of what are maybe the most significant ones you'd like to talk about?
Well, the ones I'd like to talk about today, because they're all interchangeable, they all can convert into each other, are the sex hormones, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, DHEA. There are a lot of other hormones that have a lot to do with aging, but it would be impossible to get through a whole podcast on all of them. So they seem to be the ones that go down as you age, except for cortisol that goes up as you age.
Ah, okay. So talk about that. Maybe it's different for men and women. So if you'd like to, you know, talk individually for men and for women, but what naturally would tend to happen as we age to some of these hormone levels?
So for a woman, they'll have maybe 10 years before they get to menopause where they don't feel like themselves. They get anxious, irritable, get breast cysts, they get ovarian cysts, they bleed heavily, their periods are irregular. They feel like, what they tell me is, they feel like a hot mess. They feel like a hot mess and they have PMS type symptoms. And that could go on for about 10 years. Usually somewhere any between 45 and 55 that happened, but some people it happens earlier. Then as they progress and get close to menopause, that's when progesterone drops first. And then estrogen drops, and that's when they get the symptoms of menopause. Hot flashes, night sweats, dry eyes, dry skin, dry vagina, lack of sex drive. But even the hormone imbalances cause a lack of sex drive. And they don't feel good. Many women lack testosterone, and when their testosterone goes low, they lack self-confidence. They lack self-esteem. They're very sensitive. Things that never bothered them before bother them now, and their libido goes into reverse, and they just don't feel good. So those are the main things that happen, and a lot of these are controlled by cortisol. So managing the cortisol helps manage the other things even without having to take hormones. So for men, it's not as obvious as in women. Theirs is a very gradual decline. When testosterone declines in a man, now they have some estrogen. If they convert their testosterone to estrogen, this is when they get the man boobs and the big belly, and they feel malaise. It's sort of that grumpy old man syndrome. They could feel that way with low testosterone where they don't have the energy, the strength, the endurance, or the vigor. But in many men, if they're overweight, if they lack zinc, if they drink too much alcohol, the fat cells are going to turn any testosterone into estrogen and they're not going to feel good. So that's a big issue for men. And what I used to see is when men came to me on hormone replacement and they saw other doctors and they just kept increasing their testosterone and it just felt worse and worse, it's because I didn't look at what the testosterone was turning into. Now, with all of these, you have to look for the underlying cause. Like, why are these things happening? I mean, there are a lot of other symptoms, but these are the main symptoms. Cortisol seems to be one of the major hormones. It's the, they call it the major ager. You know, when you're under stress, it goes high. And I used to joke around, but it was so true. Women said, and men as well, they feel fat, flabby, flaky, foggy, fatigued, forgetful, and frumpy. They really don't feel good. And they get all this weight around the belly. And that as stress is sustained, cortisol goes down. And when cortisol is too low, that's where you get the fibromyalgia, the chronic fatigue, the muscle aches, the pains, salt craving, lightheaded, low blood pressure, low libido, poor memory. They get infections all the time. And this puts people at risk of autoimmune disorders as well as cancer, because cortisol, it's not adrenal fatigue. That's a term where it's outlived its usefulness. What happens is the brain is really what's controlling the adrenals. The adrenals don't fatigue. Your brain just said, look, you've been flooding me with cortisol for so long, I'm not listening anymore. And it turns off. So it turns off the controls, cortisol drops, and then the other hormones follow suit. I found that managing the cortisol can manage all those other hormones. If you catch that early, you can still feel good, even if as your other hormones are changing, because you have better balance.
It sounds like what you're saying is cortisol suppresses the secretion of testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, and it will tend to drive those levels lower.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Even though naturally they'll decline anyway, but with more cortisol, that will just happen more quickly or earlier.
Most men who come to me, they want the hormones. So they come because they want the hormones. But I had some that said, look, I don't really want to be on hormones. What do? I see high cortisol. We treat the cortisol. Testosterone comes right up. I just had one last week and I said, you know what? You don't need to be on testosterone anymore. He said, well, why would that happen? And I said, well, are you still working? He said, no, I just retired. I said, there's your answer. Your cortisol went down and now your testosterone is up and you're back to normal. And he was, you know, retirement age. So it can be good at any age.
So his testosterone actually went to normal just because of the lack of stress. That's beautiful.
Yes. And I had others where once I lowered the cortisol with herbs and lifestyle and stress management and finding the underlying cause of any type of stress, then the hormones bounce back. I look for the underlying cause and I broaden the term stress. Stress could be physical, it could be mental, it could be toxic, it could be a hormone imbalance, it could be infection, inflammation, food reactions, nutritional deficiencies, lack of sleep. And another big mistake that men and women make is overdoing exercise and overdoing different foods, eating or alcohol, those types of things. Once you figure out what the levers are to turn, you can turn this around without having to manipulate hormones or give hormones. That's the beauty of the body. You take away what's impairing it and you give it what it needs. It's a beautiful instrument.
So what would be the process if somebody has potentially high cortisol and then low sex hormones? What would be the process for looking for those stressors? And how often do people maybe need supplements or something to help versus just shifting various other things in their lives?
Well, when it comes to cortisol, it depends. That's driven mostly by lifestyle. So you want to make sure they're sleeping. It takes a lot of history and questioning. You want to find out if they had exposure to mold or to metals or to any kinds of toxins. I mean, I have somebody who did environmental cleanup and they were exposed to toxins and they had high levels. You fix that, you detox them, they get better. If you get somebody sleeping, they get better. Most people who are under any kind of stress or hormone imbalance need a lot more B, C, magnesium. And then I always recommend an adaptogenic herb, depending upon if your cortisol is too high or too low. the things that I tell people is, you know, a standard formula, you have to look, because something like licorice or ginseng can raise your blood pressure and raise cortisol. So you want to avoid those if your cortisol is high. And if your cortisol is low, you want those because it makes your own cortisol last longer and will bring up the blood pressure, because when cortisol is low, the blood pressure gets low and people get lightheaded. So testing cortisol is important, and tests are available over the counter. I always recommend a 4-point saliva. But my first step with most people, I detox them. And it is amazing, amazing how different they feel. So many people come to me and they think they need hormones and they're having every symptom in the book. And once they finish the detox and we remove foods that tend to cause inflammation, they feel like $1 million. And then when they add foods back in and they see what foods are causing symptoms, they can avoid those foods. And then if they stay away from them for a period of time, and it depends upon how long their symptoms and what their underlying problems are, once they stay away from them, they can add them back, but not have it every day. You tend to get sensitive to the things that you have every day.
When you say, as I detox them, what does that look like? Does that look mainly like removing certain foods? Does that look like using herbs to help the body do that?
It's a little bit of both. Everybody does a detox differently. After years of trying different things, I have an approach. We have our signature detox and elimination diet that we can get to the heart of things very quickly. So for 2 weeks, we have people avoid the 10 most troublesome foods: alcohol, artificial sweeteners, caffeine, corn, dairy, eggs, sugar, soy, wheat, and anything with gluten. Just for 2 weeks, we have them take detoxifying herbs, and I pick a shake for them that will heal the gut, calm the immune system down, and help remove toxins. And people feel like $1 million. And then they add the foods back in and see if any of the foods caused any issues. And those foods, they just stay away from a little bit longer. But those foods tend to cause a lot of inflammation. And it's that inflammation that causes the fat, flabby, flaky, foggy, fatigued, and forgetful. It's a stress on the body. Cortisol goes up and drives the other hormones down.
How soon can people expect to see their hormone levels coming back?
It depends. You know, the longer something went on, the longer it takes. But people with high cortisol, it can go back pretty fast. People with low cortisol take a lot longer, because those are people that are burned out. They've gone a long time without it. So I can tell you that from some of my women who came in with severe PMS symptoms or perimenopausal symptoms, they felt extremely better after that 2-week deep detox. And then some of the hormones normalize. It could be as short as 2 weeks. I can't guarantee that in everyone. It depends on how well they can remove the stressor. Some people are extraordinarily stressed and they have to learn techniques to manage it and take things off their plate and address nutritional deficiencies, because stress will deplete your body of many nutrients, and correct their eating. So it depends on the person, how bad their lifestyle and habits are. But I've seen miracles in 2 weeks. One woman said she was so miserable and she had a lot of aches and pains. It could barely walk. And she couldn't believe it. Then it was as little as 2 weeks. She just felt like $1 million.
That's powerful.
I don't want to promise that to everybody. It's a beautiful thing. And that is one of my very first things that I do, because I won't even put people on hormones until I detox them first, because I want to see what's left after that. Your liver processes your hormones. So that's why you have to understand, if people are drinking a lot of alcohol, especially men, it's going to turn all that testosterone into estrogen. It's also, there may be zinc deficiencies. Men need to replace zinc deficiencies. And I used to say that midlife crisis, my theory is it's hormonal, because women get anxious and irritable and in your face, and the men pull back and get withdrawn and lethargic. And I would have couples sitting in there I would talk to both of them together, and both of them would just start nodding their heads. They related to these symptoms. You know, I would explain to the husband, I've had a lot of men find me for their wives because their PMS symptoms were so bad. They saw how much they were suffering, and they said, I want to help you. I want to find help for you. And they, once they understood that it was hormonal, they would be so grateful because it was something, some of them could just be fixed with a detox. Other people needed progesterone in perimenopause or estrogen and progesterone in menopause. But there are so many things that we can do using herbs and nutrition to bring people back to restore their health without the hormones. And then the men, a lot of times the women would feel so good. They'd say, I want my husband to come. And sometimes it was a husband that came first. Sometimes it was a wife that came first. And as I said, once you figure out the triggers, stress, trauma, toxins, adverse food reactions, inflammation, infection, nutritional deficiency, sleep disturbance, overdoing, you take away what's bad. You add what's needed and missing, and you multiply the good habits, and people transform. But the men and women really relate to the symptoms. They see it in each other, and they feel help and hope is available to them.
Yeah. Well, this is a great place to segue into. So let's say somebody has gone through the detox process. You've gotten their cortisol where it needs to be. And maybe the sex hormones are still not quite where we'd like them to be. So what would we do next? And you can start with women or start with men, whatever you'd like to do. Like, where would we go in terms of what to do with lifestyle next? Would you recommend any supplements? Would you recommend starting hormone replacement therapy?
Right. Well, you know, it depends on the stage with women. Women who are, and men too, who are making too much estrogen, or they have enough estrogen and not enough progesterone. Estrogen is a hormone of energy and growth. Too much, they get those PMS symptoms, anxiety, irritability, impatience, insomnia, growth of the breast, cysts of the breast, tender breast, bleeding, spotting, weight gain. We can give things like DIM, diindomethane, or I3C, resveratrol, sulforaphane. It helps process the hormones better. And I give those things to men too, because men who have the man boobs and the belly, I give them DIM and I3C, resveratrol, sulforaphane. I have a special formula that I like to use. They feel better because if their testosterone stays as testosterone, doesn't convert to estrogen, they feel better. And women, especially women with either PMS or perimenopause, that will bring the estrogen levels down. And I can add herbs such as chasteberry, some call it Vitex, that helps bring progesterone up. Once you're in the later stages, like women who have certain symptoms like menopausal and they don't want to go on hormones, I'll use things like extract of rhubarb, which stops the hot flashes, helps them sleep. Once they get sleep, they feel so much better. I work on sleep a lot. Again, it depends upon the issues. I may give herbs for cortisol. We talked a little bit about that. I mean, there are so many different cortisol formulas, but the main thing is to make sure if your cortisol is high, not to take ginseng and licorice. And if the cortisol is low, to add those things or glandulars. A lot of it varies based on the person, but there are a lot of herbals that I use that really make a difference.
What about testosterone supplements for men? I know that it's popular now sometimes to get herbal testosterone boosters, men who want to kind of increase their testosterone levels. Are there any that you would recommend, or what would you recommend doing first before you start reaching for something like that?
I would detox and take care of the cortisol first and any underlying issues that could be causing it. I see a lot of people who want to lose weight, they over-exercise and it actually raises their cortisol. So if they're doing that, there's nothing in them that's going to undo that. So it's figuring out the reason and the underlying cause. Tribulus will help. It's not as easy for men. I mean, it's replacing what I tell men to do that helps them raise their testosterone. Get their vitamin D optimized. Do resistance training. Make sure we have enough zinc. I might add zinc, cut down on alcohol, and give selenium. Those things can really make a big difference in changing testosterone. I haven't had as much success with the herbals for men, but those things, you take care of that, you detox, you fix the cortisol. I've had some really, really great success with that.
And you mentioned over-exercising. Is there any kind of a rule of thumb about how much would be the right amount of exercise? How much would be maybe too much? And of course, not enough is also bad in its own way. What do you recommend?
Again, it's hard to say. I would say you want to go moderate intensity. Exercise is, what do you want to accomplish from exercise? When it comes for weight loss, you have to be careful, because if you do too much, you're actually raising cortisol and that will raise blood sugar. So sometimes I'll prescribe a continuous glucose monitor for people so that they can actually see what's happening to their blood sugar. You want to feel rested and restored after exercise. And part of it's conditioning. Some people, if you were doing things and conditioning your body, you could obviously do a lot more than if you're a weekend warrior. Or if you're just trying to fit in a 2-hour workout into 1 hour and you're going so full out that you're exhausted afterwards. So a lot of it's going to depend upon how you feel afterwards and what is the result of your body and how much you've conditioned your body to be able to add more and add more and add more.
And this is actually a super popular topic that often confuses many people. They hear that exercise has a positive impact on hormones, for example, heavy, strong, resistant training in men. But then, just like you said, there's this balance where if people overtrain, it can totally backfire. Is there any truth here? And how can people find that sweet spot?
Well, it does work. I mean, you can boost growth hormone and you can boost testosterone from high intensity interval training. Resistance training works better for testosterone. The interval training works better for growth hormone. It's just that when you overdo it, and when you overdo it, you're going to feel some level of exhaustion. You're going to feel some level of burnout or weakness at times. You might get blood sugar swings. So looking for lightheadedness, looking for cravings, or feeling voraciously hungry, these are all signs that you've overdone it. And that's why I like using the continuous glucose monitor, because that will mimic a little bit what your cortisol is doing, because it's just too hard and too expensive to always measure your cortisol. But I've had people measure their cortisol in saliva after a workout and just see what it does, because I would see saliva tests and I would see a big spike. I wouldn't show it to the person. I'd say, what time did you work out? And they told me, and then I show them the spike and it was right at the time that they were working out. But your body is going to tell you, because if you still are trying to work out to lose that belly fat and the belly fat's not going away, it's either your food, your lack of sleep, or you're overdoing it.
And that's such a key takeaway for people to remember about working out. More is not always better. And in fact, the opposite is the case. So whenever they finish working out, a reminder to be mindful. Ask yourself, how do I feel? Am I full of energy or am I pooped out and all I want to do is just to eat or sleep?
Exactly. Once you work to exhaustion, it's not always a good thing. That's a common thing that I see. And then not replenishing, hydrating enough, or getting the right nutrients you need to sustain that kind of workout. I wrote a book because I was shocked when I had people coming in to see me and they were all deficient in nutrients. I used to analyze their diet in a program with the USDA database, and I'd say they're deficient. Then I would measure and they were deficient. And then I looked at the literature. I said, well, maybe it's just people coming to me. Even though I had people who were healthy and wanted to stay healthy, I had sick people who wanted to get better. But I found that most people, and the literature supported this, were deficient in B, C, magnesium, calcium, fiber, and the omega-3s. So making sure your body has what it needs is important, because heavy-duty workouts can cause a lot of oxidation, and that breaks down your tissues, and the oxidation causes inflammation. I also like to measure nutrients, but if you're talking about do it yourself, I do a pretty potent multivitamin mineral, fish oil, and vitamin K2 and D3. That's sort of the baseline, because I came to that conclusion when I did these years of measuring and studying and analyzing people's diets and looking at the literature. and that takes care of most deficiencies. And then when someone doesn't feel better or get better, then I'll go deeper and I'll measure more.
Another really popular topic these days is fasting, especially intermittent fasting. So could you speak to the effects of intermittent fasting on hormone balance for both genders?
And that could vary too, because some people tolerate it very, very well. Other people's bodies will make cortisol because it's a stress for them. People who have blood sugar swings may not tolerate intermittent fasting very well. I mean, it's very good. The 8-16 has been a pretty popular one. It will reduce weight, but it doesn't reduce fat, interestingly enough. The ones that reduce fat and change your metabolism the most are fasting for 2 days. Now, fasting could be just cutting your calories back to 500 to 700 calories. Those are the best for changing your metabolism. Now, if you're one of those people that you get lightheaded after fasting, you feel weak, you're probably having blood sugar issues and it may not be good for you. And one of the interesting things that I did when I was presenting to the American Academy of Anti-Aging and Regenerative Medicine is I had some people, especially during this pandemic, that they used to always be fine. And all of a sudden, people were getting terrible hot flashes and they weren't going away. So I found out that, you know, intermittent fasting is popular. Do you know that fasting can increase hot flashes in certain people? So the main thing is to listen to your body. And again, I love the continuous glucose monitors. You can get if you get your doctor to write a prescription, usually you can get the first week for free. And it's enough to know, to test, what is this doing? What is this doing to my blood sugar? How do I feel? But check in to see how you're feeling. Most people do fine. The 12-12 is a no-brainer, but understand that not all fasting is good for everybody. So if you're getting hot flashes when you're fasting and it goes away when you eat, there's your answer. If you're finding you're feeling weak or lightheaded and that belly fat doesn't go away, it may be causing cortisol surges. So you may want to, if you check your blood sugar, you may be able to figure out, is that a cortisol surge? As popular as it is and as good it is for us, especially for anti-aging, it has to be individualized.
And we talked a little bit about supplements. I know for women, especially around perimenopause, supplements can be very popular. Evening primrose oil, borage oil, black cohosh, all of these things. So do you recommend using any of those things? Do you find them beneficial?
I find them especially beneficial in PMS. Black cohosh it's good for hot flashes. It's good for mood. People don't realize that. You know, you can get very depressed when your hormones are all over the place. And black cohosh is a mood elevator as well as helps with hot flashes. So I do use that in perimenopause. And the chaseberry I find effective in younger women. I don't find it as effective in older women because at the certain time, your ovaries just aren't going to work anymore. You're not going to make progesterone. So we work on bringing the estrogen into balance and using more phytoestrogens, soy and rhubarb and some of the other phytoestrogens. I find that's very, very helpful for women that are having issues. And the evening primrose and borage oil, very good for PMS. Very good for PMS. So if you're feeling PMS symptoms, you're probably in pre-perimenopause or PMS, or you're in perimenopause. What happens during this perimenopausal time, it's all up in the air. Your estrogen is going to fluctuate and you stop. Some months you'll ovulate and you'll make progesterone. You'll be calm and it'll be a good month. Your spouse is happy, your children are happy, your coworkers and friends are happy. And then I had a woman say to me, I get ragey. So if you're still bleeding and you're still getting your periods, they may be shorter or more spread out. You're perimenopause. The definition of menopause is a whole year without a period. And I've had people go 10 or 11 months without a period and they think they're there. And then all of a sudden, wow, there's no easy way. If you're bleeding and you feel those PMS symptoms, you're still in perimenopause because you're making estrogen and no progesterone.
So would you recommend testing those levels, or do estrogen levels fluctuate so much that it's not really helpful to test those in perimenopause?
Well, I definitely test them because you want to see the difference between your estrogen and progesterone. If they're not in balance, that's what's causing the symptoms. So you either bring estrogen down with, I use a lot of fiber, and telling people to stay away from toxins. This is why I detox everybody, men and women, because toxins like in herbicides and pesticides, hormones fed to animals, and animals that have eaten grains that have been sprayed with herbicides and pesticides, it gets stored in their fat. And then you eat it, gets stored in your fat. These are obesogens. And you'd be surprised at all the personal care products that we use that have chemicals in them that disrupt your immune system, your hormone system, and your nervous system. So getting rid of those toxins, having more fiber, and the big trick for men and women is relieving constipation. If you're not moving your bowels at least every day, whatever your body is trying to get rid of, all those toxins just get reabsorbed. And any women that I have corrected their constipation, anybody that had issues with their hormones or had issues when I was replacing their hormones, it was because they were constipated.
Would you recommend testing FSH and LH for women to see how close they are to menopause?
I do, but you still don't know. I mean, you still don't know. It starts to creep up. You know you're getting there, but it could be weeks, it could be months, it could be years. So I do measure it when we're uncertain or we don't know how close. In a perimenopausal or a PMS woman, I don't always do it. Once you're totally menopausal, there's really no point. But in perimenopause, I'll measure it. But I have some people that they have symptoms and they've had symptoms for a long time where they feel, you know, I'm not sure, they're not sure. We'll measure it.
And what about measuring testosterone in women or measuring estrogen in men? Would you normally recommend doing that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because women who have low testosterone, have low libido, they feel sensitive. They don't have a sense of well-being. Testosterone can give women a really, really nice sense of well-being. So I absolutely measure it. In women, if you give DHEA, it can turn into testosterone. That doesn't necessarily happen with men. But the important thing to know is the dose for DHEA in a man is very different than the dose of DHEA in a woman. So I usually start a woman at 5 milligrams of DHEA, and men I start at 25, and I measure. And another mistake that people make is if your cortisol is low and you give DHEA, you turn off the part of your brain that's going to stimulate your adrenal glands to make cortisol. So you want, that's what I'm saying. They're all interconnected. So it's best to measure all of them together. Now in men, I definitely measure estrogen both in men and women, something called dihydrotestosterone, because your body will convert, testosterone can stay as testosterone. It can turn and convert into estrogen by an enzyme called aromatase, or it can turn into dihydrotestosterone. So understanding that, because I've had some men where they'll look at their testosterone levels and they're a little low, but they are just jacked up. And I have many of the wives call me saying, you better lower his dose, because if your dihydrotestosterone is high, you can get acne, facial hair, hair loss on the head. And this happens in men and women. And you can get aggressive behavior. It can really jack up your libido so much that it's scary. So I had a woman, she came in with her husband and she looked at him and said, if you don't get, he wanted somebody who was going to be very aggressive with him, because I'm not that aggressive with them because I know it could cause problems. She said she was going to divorce him unless he stops or if his opinion come to me, you know, but yeah, I mean, it's a pitfall. The other thing is that women want that good feeling and may not want to go on testosterone. They take DHEA and they might take the male dose and it's a little too much for them. And they get angry and they can get aggressive too.
Can a man ever have too little estrogen? We've talked about women having too much, too little testosterone. What happens with men and estrogen?
they don't feel good. I mean, estrogen is very important for the brain. It's very important for memory. It also has to do with sperm production as well. So the low estrogen can cause a low sex drive. That can also cause a low sex drive in women. People think only testosterone is responsible for sex drive. But if you're tired and you have no energy from lack of estrogen, you're not going to have a sex drive either. You need all the components to work. And of course, low estrogen in men decreases that bonding experience and this sexual and social behavior. And you get both in men and women, you get bone loss. I don't see low estrogen in men very often, unless what I see is when men come from other doctors who put them on something to lower their estrogen because their testosterone is converting to estrogen. When the more proper thing is to give selenium, zinc, decrease alcohol, lose the belly fat, do some resistance exercise, that's the first line of treatment. If that doesn't work, they give them something called Arimidex or anastrozole, and that lowers the estrogen too much. And then the men feel, they just don't feel good. They feel their sex drive is gone, even though they're on sufficient testosterone.
It's really important to have that balance for everybody.
Oh. Totally. You have to know how everything converts into other things and what's going to affect it. But lifestyle is the most important. Eat nutritionally dense food that's not processed. Manage your blood sugar. That's huge. That's huge for hormone fluctuations and mood swings that many people who are aging, even not people who are aging, they complain about that. Sugar swings also affect your weight. It affects your cortisol. It affects your mood. Affects your energy. So eating a nutrient-dense diet that's low in processed foods, low in sugar, you don't have to go totally low carb, but if you eat the right kind of carbs, you're energized. Getting enough sleep, having a sufficient amount of exercise without overdoing it, and finding joy in life too. I have people came in, they checked off all the boxes and they were just joyless. And you know, you need stimulation for your mind as well as for your body. And you need the social connections. I mean, we all experienced what it was like to not have that during this pandemic. That was tough.
Well, and you mentioned bone density. So let's just touch on kind of maintaining bone mass and muscle mass and how to avoid frailty as we age. So can you just touch on the importance
Absolutely.
Of that?
Absolutely. Well, what I do is I have people measure their own acid-base balance in their urine. You can get a roll of testing paper from Amazon. It's like $4 or $5. It'll last your lifetime practically. If your pH is between 6.8 and 7.4, you're good. If you're too acidic, just like people used to take Tums, which is calcium, to help with stomach acid because the calcium buffers acid. Well, your body is smart. It's going to take, if you're too acidic, because you need the right pH for all the enzymes to work. Enzymes convert food into energy, and it has a lot of, and it converts different hormones into other hormones. If you're too acidic, it's going to take calcium from your bones. So first and foremost, look at acid-base balance. I give out a handout, and you could Google it. What are acidic foods? What are alkaline foods? Because lemon tastes acidic, but it actually leaves your body alkaline. And that's why it doesn't always make sense. So I give a list and I just say, look, you're going to eat all these foods, but you're going to eat more alkaline foods and less acidic foods. Weight-bearing exercise is important. Like I have people that are swimmers, but they're not getting the pressure on their bones to build bone. So you have to combine it with some resistance training, having the right hormone balance. Cortisol is a big one to leach. It breaks down bones. It breaks down everything. Breaks down muscle, breaks down bone, breaks down the memory centers of your brain. It raises blood pressure, raises blood sugar, raises heart rate. It makes you store everything as fat. So getting the cortisol into control, see, we're always going back to cortisol. Getting the cortisol in control is extremely important for bones. Getting the exercise, and then estrogen's a big one, both in men and women. And even if you don't have estrogen, I do supplements. I don't give calcium that often because there are some studies that say you're better off getting calcium from food. there were some studies that there was an increased risk of calcification of the arteries and of the aortic valve when you took calcium supplements. But sometimes you have to, because people are just not getting enough. I also combine it with vitamin D and vitamin K, because vitamin K not only helps you absorb more vitamin D, it prevents you from losing helps you absorb more calcium, prevents you from losing calcium, and it directs the calcium to go into your bones rather than into your arteries and soft tissues. Plus, there's a compound that I use to supplement that also has orthosalicylic acid. So that's kind of like the spark that sets collagen production. It initiates collagen production. So that combination of having the vitamin D, the type of calcium, which is hydroxyapatite, vitamin K, weight-bearing exercise, alkalinity, or the salicylic acid, that works for most people. And those that are bad off and they want hormone replacement, yeah, I give hormone replacement. But it's not estrogen alone. Estrogen builds bone, testosterone strengthens bone, and progesterone preserves bone.
Would you also measure and look at progesterone in men, or just testosterone and estrogen for them?
I do sometimes. It's very rare. I know that there were some colleagues that used to give men progesterone to help to stop the conversion to that strong testosterone we talked about, because it does do that, and it does do that in women. So women who get hair loss from estrogen dominance and on progesterone, you give them progesterone, it helps. But I found that most of the men I gave it to just didn't feel good on it. And I've never seen a high progesterone in a man. In men, it's almost normal to have low progesterone. I do measure it just because I want to see what's going on, if I see any outliers, but it's kind of rare.
Makes sense.
Just a quick follow-up question about vitamin K. You meant vitamin K2, right?
Yes, it's vitamin K2 is MK7, menoquinone. Yes, so thank you for clarifying that. There's so much in my head, getting it all out and getting being too specific. I don't know how specific and non-specific to be, but yes, K2 is MK7.
You mentioned both vitamin D3 and vitamin K2. How much do people normally need to take?
I measure. It's safe, and I found the majority of my patients take 5,000 international units of vitamin D3, K2, D3, and 45 to 90 micrograms of K2 as MK7. That's generally, but some people have high, so I measure and I'll drop it down. And some people need up to 10,000 a day. So I measure, and a rule of thumb is 1,000 international units will raise your vitamin D by 10. The optimal dose in the functional medicine world is 50 to 90 of vitamin D. Hardly anybody measures the vitamin K.
You just take the supplement and it doesn't have any kind of negative side effects to worry about.
No, K doesn't. D can, but it's kind of hard to get toxic on vitamin D.
And we have so little naturally, most of us.
Yeah, we do. And a lot of people are indoors at a computer, wearing sunscreen or makeup or something to block the sun. But vitamin D, we actually lose the capacity to convert it into its active forms. And they actually did studies in people in Miami and people who are surfers in Hawaii, and they had low levels. So many patients tell me that, oh, I don't take it in the summer. And then I'd measure and I'd say, see, it's low. I actually did an experiment on myself, and I went out in a bikini and I laid in the sun for a while with no sunscreen. It's just for an experiment, not too long, for about a week or two, for an hour or two, and nothing. Didn't budge. So it's a misnomer that you're going to get enough from the sun. Maybe when you're younger, but as we age, nothing works quite as well. You know, we don't absorb things as well. We don't convert things as well. We don't detox as well. Things slow down and we have to just keep tweaking.
That's really good for people to know. And how about if we talk about hormone replacement therapy a little bit? How often do you see people who really benefit from taking hormones as opposed to being able to balance naturally using all of these lifestyle and nutritional things?
What I think is important for people to know is there's been a 180-degree turn about hormone replacement therapy in women. And I put together a synopsis that I give to my patients. I want people to make informed decisions. Doing nothing has its consequences. So when women don't take hormones, they can still get breast cancer. In fact, the latest studies and the analysis of the old studies show that the risk of breast cancer has been overblown. I can't say there's no risk if you're on hormones, but there's a risk even if you're not on hormones. But there's more of a risk of cardiovascular disease. It affects your heart, your blood vessels. It affects your brain. There's a higher risk of dementia and a higher risk of osteoporosis. And all of those are far more common than breast cancer in women. So that a lot of it is a choice. I give my patients a choice. Some women, no way, no how are they going to be on hormones. I don't push it. I let them make a choice. I give them the information. And other women are, give me those hormones right now. And I do have a good portion of my patients on hormone replacement therapy. The good news for men is testosterone has never been tied to cancer. And actually, there was some studies saying that men with normal testosterone levels did better in COVID. They survived COVID better. They didn't end up in the ICU like men with low testosterone. But I think the trick with men is when they don't have a good lifestyle, and that's true with any hormones. If your lifestyle isn't good, they're not going to work as well. And that's why eating clean, exercising, sleep, managing your stress, it's a foundation for everything. Hormones are not going to be the be-all, end-all and can't make up for a bad lifestyle. They totally make you feel better. And I've had some women who've been on them for quite some time, and I just tell them, listen, why don't you just try going off for a while and see how you feel? We could always put you back on, because at the 10-year mark, that's when hormones, the risk of cancer goes up. The older you get, the risk of cancer goes up. But I've had quite a number come back and say, look, I just don't feel good off of them. And even the North American Menopause Society and 20 other societies all said the quality of life matters. Because if you can't sleep, you can't think, you're miserable, you're moody, you're depressed, you're anxious, you're irritable, you're losing your bones, you're losing your memory, your blood lipids are going up. I had three doctors tell my patient, one of my patients, go back on the estrogen, go back on the hormones, because you did better with them. But at least I give them the opportunity to take a break and see how they feel.
It sounds like you're saying some people will stay on for the rest of their lives. Some people will stay on for a few years and then taper down. Is that true for men as well?
It's the same. Most men tend to stay on it because they feel so good on it, but they don't have that dilemma where people are still working off old knowledge, that old Women's Health Initiative study where they lumped everybody together, women whose average age was 63, 10 years past menopause, the ship has sailed already. You know, so I don't generally give women hormones if they've been away from hormones for 10 years. I've had some women come from other doctors and they were on hormones for 10 years. They want to stay on them. That's okay. But if you've been off hormones for 10 years, you lost your bones, your arteries got hard. It's hard to turn that ship around. Not that it's contraindicated, but I tell women, you're not going to get the big wow. You're not going to get the big wow that everybody else felt. Men don't have that issue and the decision-making, and they can stay on it unless they have issues with their prostate. And even that is somewhat controversial. I mean, some will argue that even if you had prostate cancer, you can take testosterone, but I'm not one to do that. I don't give that, but it has not been shown to cause prostate cancer. So there's the only reason men go off the hormones, men on injectable testosterone, tend to get high liver enzymes, and they tend to get high red blood cell count. And that red blood cell count being high, it clogs your arteries. So that's dangerous. That's why I only give testosterone through the skin in men. And there are only a handful where they just don't absorb it or they don't do well. Well, I'll give it subcutaneously, which is through a different type of testosterone. The forms of the injectables can cause side effects like that, and then I take them off.
And it's a big takeaway for women that if a woman is in her 60s and she's never really thought about her hormonal health, it might not work as well for her to go on hormones at that point. So it's something to think about earlier in the process and stay on top of it rather than waiting until later and then trying to get it back.
Yeah. So what they showed in one of the studies that was done in France, it was more of an observational study, where the first 2 years, the risk of breast cancer decreased. The first 5 years, the risk of breast cancer was the exact same as what was in the normal population, not on hormones. And it increased slightly after 5 years. But if you were on synthetic, the risk of breast cancer went up right away, immediately. So it's, I think most people who are in the know would agree. 5 years, you have nothing to worry about. You bought 5 years of better brain, better bone, better mood, better sleep, better everything. But after that, it all depends. I have people that are in their late 70s that would say, I just feel so good on them. I want to stay on them. And I said, until I find some reason not to, I make sure everybody gets their mammography. At the 10-year mark, I ask people to get a pelvic ultrasound because I can't see inside. I can't see what their ovaries are doing. Knock wood. I've been pretty fortunate with people and made a lot of people very happy and healthy and feeling young and vibrant and vigorous. And it saved a lot of relationships because both men and women go through hormonal changes that can totally affect their relationships.
You touched a little on the difference between the bioidentical and synthetic hormones, but if you maybe want to talk a little bit more on that for people who aren't aware about that.
Sure. What they find is that, well, it's also how you give it. Estrogen was always given orally in the past. When you give it, you take it in your mouth orally, it goes through first pass in the liver and it can cause clots. And these were made from horse urine. And there is oral bioidentical estrogen, but it's still going to cause blood clots. And the blood clots increase the risk of heart attack, stroke, and thrombosis. Oral progesterone, on the other hand, the natural progesterone does not cause blood clots. It does not cause any problems with the gallbladder. It relaxes the smooth muscle in the arteries, the coronary arteries. It has a lot more beneficial effects, and it has a lesser degree of the risk of breast cancer. They felt that the synthetic progestins can cause gallbladder issues, thrombosis, meaning blood clots, spasms of the coronary arteries. It does not help with brain and the neurological system. Progesterone does. And there are big differences between both of them.
And so you'd normally recommend using a patch or cream rather than taking...
Yes. Estrogen, I only give in a patch or cream. You can give it vaginally. It's just a little more messy, or troche, which is between the cheek. I hardly use those because it's hard not to swallow. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to just absorb. So if you swallow it, it's like taking it orally. So I tend to just use the patches or the creams. They're very available. The patches are made by pharma companies. There's also a gel that's made by a pharma company that's covered by insurance, and it's bioidentical. And the same thing with progesterone. Progesterone doses are not... Pharmaceutical companies only make it in 100 or 200, and that's not enough. Some people need 50, some people 125. So I tend to have that compounded in a pill, and very few people who can't tolerate the pill, either because it makes them too groggy, I'll have it compounded into a cream.
So the compounding is, for anyone who doesn't know, for getting precisely. Yeah, I just know people out there might not realize.
Lily, I'm so sorry.
Very precise dose.
I worked in New York City during the AIDS epidemic, and I was fortunate that when we did rounds in the ICU, patients couldn't swallow things. They couldn't put on their skin. So we had a compounding pharmacist that came with us, and we'd say, okay, we need this medicine. How are we going to give it to him? Oh, I can make it into a lollipop. I can make it into a swish and swallow. I can make it into a liquid. So they made ways of getting a medication into somebody who couldn't take it the traditional way, or the dose they couldn't tolerate a certain dose. So they made it, customized it for the person. And I just thought that was normal. I had no idea that that was so unusual. And that's why people got so scared about compounds and compounding pharmacies. Yes, compounding pharmacies are not FDA approved because it's the difference between manufacturing on a large scale that FDA oversees versus it's like somebody making cupcakes at home versus somebody having a big factory. So they'll make it in very small batches that are individualized. I visited most of the pharmacies that I know of, and they have their own certification process, and they have to send samples to their oversight organization to match and see, is it pure? Does it have the dose that you say? Even pharmaceuticals, they can vary. The dose can vary. So there's a certain percentage of wiggle room that they have. There is some oversight. There were some fly-by-night pharmacies that cropped up when bioidenticals became extremely popular. But I think they've been weeded out for the most part.
The lesson would be go to a healthcare professional that you trust, and they'll be able to send you to a compounding pharmacy that you can also trust.
Believe me, if there was a problem with a compound, my phone would be ringing off the hook because I tend to use some of the same pharmacies and I would know it. I definitely would know it.
Would you recommend that people try to just test and manage their own hormone replacement? Or I would think so. Yeah. Definitely talk to somebody about this.
Yeah, I have very knowledgeable patients and, you know, and I teach them a lot to understand their body and how the hormones have an effect. And one day I was like, what is going on? She took a male dose of DHEA and her DHEA went through the roof. She was getting snippy. Thankfully not with me, but I think it was affecting her relationship, and I measured. So you don't know what the hormone is going to do in your body. In women, the DHEA can turn to testosterone and then they get hair loss. And you just don't know where it's going to go because all of these hormones interconvert. It starts with cholesterol, turns into pregnenolone, then goes to progesterone. And progesterone can go down many pathways. It can go to DHEA, it can go to cortisol, it can go to testosterone, which then turns to estrogen. It's like a ping ball where you don't know where the ball is going to go. And that's why I think you really should go to somebody who knows what they're doing, because you have no idea what's going to happen.
And this is super important because DHEA is actually a supplement. So people could get it in Amazon and they can get into some really big trouble.
And I have very educated patients and some of them just did the wrong thing. And then if your cortisol is low, they hear, well, you know, they don't know their cortisol is low. They know DHEA can really help and lift their mood, but it actually keeps the cortisol low and it'll make them feel worse. So you really should know what you're doing when it comes to these things. It's not like a multivitamin where if you take too much B or something, you're just going to pee it out. Your body will use what it needs and just get rid of it. But hormones aren't like that. And especially the steroid hormones, they can be stored in your body, especially if you take the creams, like women take those over-the-counter progesterone creams. Some of them stay in the fat. And I used to see the do-it-yourselfers come in all bloated, and it takes a long time to get that out of your body. That's why I like the oral progesterone the best. It reduces anxiety, helps women sleep. They love it. They feel good immediately. And if you overdo it, it's out of your system in 2 days. You don't have to worry. Whereas the creams are like, okay, it's going to take a while. It's going to take a while.
Amir, do you have any more questions you'd like to follow up with?
We get tons of questions on this one. There's this notion that after some time on HRT, the body stops producing some hormones on its own, especially with testosterone replacement therapy in men. And that means basically it's a commitment for life. However, you just mentioned that it can be available for some people to cycle off, see how they feel. How can someone know if HRT is a good option for them?
Well, that's why you can't overdo it. First of all, I would never give testosterone to a man that wants to stay fertile. Most of the people I give testosterone to are either they had a problem with their pituitary gland and or they had damage to their testicles and there's no way, no how that their body can make testosterone and that I'm not impairing their fertility. And this is another reason why I don't want to overdo it in men, even when they're older, because they're going to make some testosterone. They may not make enough to make them feel good, but the higher the dose, the longer you're on it, the more it may turn off your own testosterone. So I replace to a reasonable level. I've had some people come to me and they say, I only feel good when I'm at 1,000. I said, well, then I'm not the right doctor for you, because I think it's a disservice to you to do that. But if you're not looking to have any more children, it's not as big of a problem. But if you do stop it, you may or may not, it may or may not bounce back. And it's very variable.
What is the role that testosterone plays in somebody's ability to maintain good muscle mass, in particular frailty issues with aging?
It's huge. Testosterone and growth hormone are important for that. I mean, growth hormone, it's illegal to give in many of this. You have to really go through a lot to get it. But testosterone is important for muscle mass and feeling a self of sense of well-being. It's not just for libido, but it's very important for muscle mass. It can reverse frailty. So men don't have that same issue. So if they're frail and you give them testosterone, it's not like women waiting 10 years past menopause. You can still get some benefits.
What about growth hormone? A lot of people consider whether they should or shouldn't use it as a part of HRT. Do you have any experience you can share?
I used to, but then when they made it, the regulations prohibited me from doing it, I stopped doing it. So people use growth hormone analogs. I mean, I'm in New Jersey. They don't even allow growth hormone analogs, but we found that some of the analogs didn't last. It could boost your growth hormone, but it didn't last. So they're coming out with a lot of other things. And I just, because of where I practice, and they were very, very, very strict about it because they had some big issues with somebody abusing it. It was a big scandal. And these people asked me to work for them. I didn't want anything to do with them. But it became a really, really big issue. So they cracked down. So I just stay away from it. But I'm not saying it's bad, because it's not. Anything used right, any tool when it's used right, it's a good thing. And I don't have as much experience with the analogs, more because of where I'm practicing. And other colleagues are using them with success. So I've actually referred people to clinics out of state if I felt that they needed something that I couldn't give them.
And really important for people to be aware with the growth hormone, with the testosterone, with any of these, that just because something feels really good, kind of short term, doesn't mean it's good for you on a long term basis.
In young men, if they have an issue with low testosterone, I've given Clomid. It acts like luteinizing hormone, which is stimulates, comes from the pituitary gland in the brain that stimulates the testes. That's worked in some people, and that's cheap, it's easy. Or HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin. It's known as a hormone in pregnancy, but the thing is, it does the same thing. It acts like LH. Some men still do testosterone and HCG. HCG is now hard to get, but that preserves testicular mass and it'll stimulate your own testes to make some testosterone. So I have some men who do both, but it's become so expensive and hard to get now. But that's a way a young man can get their testosterone boosted without taking testosterone and to preserve their fertility.
So kind of paying attention to the lifestyle, to the cortisol, and then these natural ways that can help boost your body's own production.
Yeah. So I use the acronym STAIN. Stress. The T is trauma or toxins. Adverse food reactions. Inflammation or infection. Nutritional deficiency. Sleep disturbance. And then I added the last O, overdoing. But if you look at those things, you take care of those things, your body bounces back.
Beautiful. All right.
You had some great questions. You know, I could talk about this forever.
Yes. I want to say, yes, please.
I love the transformations I see in people. And even with some of the very simple things, it's so heartwarming. This is what keeps me going. This is why I love this work, because people change sometimes with very simple things. And if in the right hands, you can balance your hormones and take hormones safely.
Oh, any tips for somebody who's looking out there for the right doctor to help them balance their hormones? Like, are there certifications or things that they could look for somebody who knows how to do this?
Well, the best place, because I trained, I'm pretty much a bit of a nerd when it comes to this stuff, but I trained through many, many places. And some were very aggressive. Some only did oral, some only did injectables. The best place was A4M, American Academy of Anti-Aging and Regenerative Medicine. I think that they have the best training for hormone replacement therapy and mostly bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, because if they've completed the fellowship, and even better, if they did the advanced endocrinology course, they're solid. They're solid. So the A4M, the number four, A4M.com, they have a directory. Look for somebody who's fellowship trained. It will be FAARM, Fellowship American Academy Regenerative Medicine. You'll know they'll have the best training.
Fantastic. That's really helpful. I think this is going to be really helpful for a lot of people out there who are struggling, who have questions about these things. So thank you so much for your time. We really, really appreciate having you here and having you share all of this wisdom and knowledge with people.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much. This is such life-changing information for people to hear, for all of us to hear, actually. So thank you so much, and we can't thank you enough.
My pleasure.